Welcome to EncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. EncLive On Air is a podcast from EncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, EncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by NeoGenomics, Derek Lyle, MD, Chief Medical Officer of Clinical Services at NeoGenomics, and Kashyap Patel, MD, Chief Executive Officer of Carolina Blood and Cancer Care Associates, and President of the Community Oncology Alliance, discuss the role of hematopathologists in the diagnostic workup of myelodysplastic syndromes, the importance of comprehensive morphological and cytological assessment, and the need for standardization across the board. Later in their conversation, Drs. Lyle and Patel reviewed some of the challenges associated with the diagnosis and management of MDS, the current treatment landscape, and the role of next-generation sequencing and optimal testing practices in the field.
Hello, I'm Dr. Derek Lyle, Chief Medical Officer at NeoGenomics Laboratory, and I'm here with Dr. Kashyap Patel.
And hello, this is Dr. Kashyap Patel. I'm the CEO of the Carolina Blood and Cancer Care Associates of Southside Charlotte with a suburban and rural practice. And also, I'm the president of the Community Oncology Alliance, a medical director for the Blue Cross Blue Shield, South Carolina, and the director of the International Oncology Network as well. And I'm also a practicing oncologist and hematologist.
Today, Dr. are going to discuss some of the challenges associated with the diagnosis and management of myelodysplastic syndromes. Taking a brief look at our agenda for this discussion today, we'll talk about the current hematologic landscape along with some updates in myelodysplastic syndrome. We'll talk about the role of next-gen sequencing in MDS, optimal testing practices in patients suspected to have MDS, and we'll talk about some of the issues that face the current prognostic scoring system. So it's interesting, a few slides there talking about the challenges of diagnosing MDS. And it's something that over the last 15 years, I hear about all the time. And I spent a good part of my career working with a medical team, a medical group that was filled with, board certified hematopathologists. And one of the main things that we did was the workup of patients with cytopenias suspected of having MDS. And we were always able to share these cases and exchange opinions and work together as a group to get aligned on how we, how we looked at the morphology to assess dysplasia, and then also the workup that we did to get the most useful information for oncologists treating these patients with MDS. And I'm just curious, that's sort of my perspective with working up these patients with MDS, but I know that in pathology groups around the country, it can be a different experience out in the community setting. And I'm just wondering if you have any, unique perspective on these challenges associated with diagnosing MDS in the community setting.
Absolutely, Derek. I think, this brings up multiple issues. One is the age group where the MDS is quite prevalent also has many possibility of having other cancers as well. So lack of appropriate interpretation of the MDS as a diagnosis can also frequently lead to, say, for example, if I have a patient who's got breast cancer, and then if she has low pancytopenia, if that's an MDS, that makes it hard for me to treat that patient with chemotherapy because the cytotoxicity of chemotherapeutic agents could be way too high. And an appropriately trained hematopathologist, fully equipped with the experience and the lab, may make it easier for me to manage those patients. So we are talking about the patients with multiple comorbidities who could be at a much higher risk of complications if we ignore the diagnosis of MDS in those patients or attribute that diagnosis to something else like chronic liver disease. You could have overlap of rheumatoid arthritis, that patient may have been on methotrexate for a lifetime. It's difficult for us to diagnose MDS in that patient population if the hematopathologist is not very well equipped. So there are not only diagnostic, but also therapeutic consequences of inadequate direction of diagnosis. And that's why we lean on to the hematopathologists who are totally equipped with a comprehensive arsenal of the diagnostic technology that would help us manage our patients best.
Right. And one of the challenges that you touched upon is this notion of inter-observer reliability between pathologists in the assessment of dysplasia, for example. You know, blast count might be another area where pathologists don't always agree, but I think assessment of dysplasia is one of the key things. And then the other thing, you know, we touched upon is not just the challenges assessing the morphology and the cytology, but what constitutes an appropriate workup for patients with either MDS or suspected to have MDS. And this is something I see out in the community all the time, where not only pathologists have sort of different approaches to the workup of MDS, but then community oncologists have different expectations of what such a workup would look like. One of the key things that seems to come up again and again and again, and we're gonna get into this a bit more later, I think, but I just kind of wanted initial impressions from you, is the utilization of next-gen sequencing in the workup of MDS. And again, I see a huge spectrum out in the community in terms of what people want as part of a workup and how they use the results from these tests. And just any initial thoughts from you about the utility of next-gen sequencing in this setting?
Excellent topic. I can speak on this for the whole day, Derek, so I'll just restrict to that. But indeed, I think, you know, I'm a big fan of CHIP, which is clonal hematopoietic potential. I do think that, you know, peripheral blood NGS or even bone marrow NGS is appropriately carried out testing does help us in an enormous way of distinguishing between different causes. But it's not just the NGS alone. I think it's the conglomeration of age at presentation, predisposing factors, the morphological features from the peripheral blood, the flow cytometry, the cytogenetics, as well as the NGS. It's again, as you said before, is one of the confusion happens because of the overlap of the even NGS between different myeloid disorders. So it's not just the NGS, it's not just cytogenetics, it's a comprehensive analysis of all the features that we talk together, including an expert hematopathologist who's got an eye to distinguish between the, you know, the kind of atypical and atypical myeloid or thrombopoietic precursors that would help us appropriately. So obviously, I think there's a huge need of combining all of this together rather than compartmentalizing the diagnosis. As we learn more and more about the role of genetic mutations, in the space of MDS, it also helps us to understand, first is, you know, the prognosis, the newer intervention, as well as the outcomes. So where do you see 5 years from now, Derek? I mean, do you think will CHIP be a reality for every patient to figure out what kind of genetic makeup do they have, and where are we heading with that, in particular in these patients with low-grade pancytopenias?
Yes, I think we will be there, hopefully in 5 years. It has been a long, steady journey. I mentioned, you know, some of those papers in the earlier days investigating these gene mutations. We really started paying attention probably around 2009, 2010, 2011. At that time, the guidelines were very different from where they are now. There was not as strong an emphasis at that time because it was all relatively new. Now, 10 years later, this is why I made the point about, you know, the NCC and now saying that the using these genes in MDS is highly recommended. So I do think that over the next 5 years, we will start to see more and more incorporation of this type of testing in patients with MDS. Currently, we really don't see full uptake in community oncology. That's been a steady progression over the years. More and more oncology groups begin to use this type of testing, but there's not full uptake. But, you know, frankly, we tend to across all cancer types, not just MDS, and even something like, you know, lung and breast. We always see that there's not full uptake of the full scope of genomic testing, even in the setting of specific targeted therapies. So it could be a while yet, but I think the trends with the consensus guidelines, and then also the trend towards incorporating these results into the IPSSR, and it'll probably have a different name at that point to flag the incorporation of the molecular results. But when that happens, and note, I don't say if it happens, I say when it happens, I also think that will change oncologist approach to this type of testing for MDS patients.
I think you raise a very important point, Derek, and I'm working very hard on that. I mean, I realize that the uptake is anywhere between 40 to 60%. That means that about 60% patients are not getting what they need to be getting, solid tumors as well as in terms of MDS. And clearly, what it leads to is also my favorite topic of disparity, because the less penetration we have of this testing in community oncology, the less information we have from the ethnic minorities where we serve most of the patient population. So I've taken it heads on. I think I'm working on two big research projects right now, and I'll have probably, I'm submitting three or four abstracts to the ASCO. And I was quite surprised to find, you know, we just started doing what we call all incomers hereditary cancer testing. And in about first 70 cohort, I saw patients with Li-Fulmani syndrome. I've seen patients with the Meconis anemia. I've seen patients with von Hippel-Lindau disease. And virtually out of 70 patients that we have initially reported, I think almost 80% of them had some sort of genetic mutation of the significance that needed some additional intervention. So obviously, these are the challenges. You know, peer world is another one that actually can pose a challenge for NGS uptake of NGS testing. And then, I mean, what do you see the future? I mean, how easy can we assimilate that in terms of the routine practice?
Well, certainly, there's certainly, I think, an education component that needs to continue to take place, not only with oncologists, but I think patients as well. And, you know, we always talk about, you know, patients using Google and, you know, Dr. Google. Patients become more and more savvy. And I think a lot of the education efforts are going to be directed to patients and not just the physicians who treat them. And at NeoGenomics, we have a group specifically dedicated to this. We have a role which is director of patient engagement. And so this team really does a lot of outreach with patient advocacy groups. They do a lot of different work with patients. And then, you know, one thing is just providing education, whether to patients or oncologists, about some of the trends that are happening. And when you were talking about luspatercept, this new drug for MDS, it kind of got my attention. It reminded me that it's always struck me that maybe there's not a whole lot of knowledge about this drug as of yet. I mean, it's relatively new, but I've always been thinking, you know, what can we do to get more outreach to patients and physicians around this topic of MDS, you know, low-grade MDS with you know, the clinical indications for this drug. And it was remarkable to me because when I was at ASH a couple of months ago, I was actually approached by a group who was interested in that specific topic, a sort of educational campaign around this drug to make patients and providers more aware of it. So I think the education piece is going to be very, very key in this concept of patient education around these drugs and around these diseases and around these therapies is really just in its early stages.
Very interesting, because actually my practice has about 7 patients on that drug right now. So I mean, I've seen at least 4 of them actually came off the transfusion. So it's incredible drug.
That's great.
Patients had stopped responding to the ESA. And when we switched them over, I think virtually all but 2 patients have responded pretty well.
That's great to hear.
And I think, look, this again shows the power of the newer NGS testing, particularly in combination with flow, cytogenetics, and everything else. So, and as we discussed before, Derek, is we are moving into the area of targeted therapies, more like a personalized medicine. And the more discoveries that we make in terms of finding out the mutations that are consistently predictable in the patients with the MDS, the higher likelihood that we'll be able to develop drugs. But I really want to bring the point of increasing appropriate testing in the community oncologists, primarily because the patient population that could be impacted may have the kind of, you know, lack of representation right now and lack of knowledge about the mutation that is specific to certain ethnicities may actually leave them behind the benefit of newer targeted therapies. So I do feel that we have to ramp up all the resources to make sure that comprehensive testing in patients with suspected MDS that includes everything beginning from blood smear to bone marrow to NGS testing and flow is very important to provide them the benefit of personalized medicine. And I remember President just announced the Cancer Moonshot 2 program. And I think one of the big components of Cancer Moonshot 2 is a personalized medicine.
I would just say for more information about neogenomics testing, here's some additional information. And we go by the slogan, One Lab, Vital Answers. We have a comprehensive portfolio of oncology tests all under one lab. Dr. Patel, it's been very nice chatting with you about MDS today. So thank you very much for this talk.
And likewise, feelings are mutual. Look forward to having more conversations down the road, my friend. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by NeoGenomics. Check back on Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.